for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world.
This is Mismatched Prime.
So, Jeff Brown, welcome to the program.
Thanks, buddy.
I love everything that's going on right now. The hat, the ticket, smile. I mean, it's the whole Jeff Brown experience.
There we go. Keep the ticket showing there, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to let the people know what's going on here. So do you wanna? So, Jeff Brown here, for those who don't know, just won best overall at Adepticon, and now he's now the I think sole proprietor of a golden ticket. I think is it the first one? There's a couple. There's been a couple.
I would say Diogo and Sam both won a golden ticket at Stud, I believe.
You're joining the exclusive club now. Oh my god! And so, for our listeners, maybe what does winning a golden ticket mean exactly? Because I know I want one, but I don't know really what it does.
So there's the Warhammer World Championships in November down in Atlanta, Georgia, and you need to win a golden ticket, which is placing high at one of the qualifying events, to be invited to this. So due to the best overall at Adepticon, I got my golden ticket, and the folks at Adepticon are also very nice and are covering both airfare and hotel for me as well.
Really? So this is
because
now you're going as Jeff Brown, Adepticon champion. You know, you're no longer Canadian schmuck, Jeff Brown. You know, you've transcended this, and this is real. Is this out of curiosity? Is this the highest like kind of award or prize that you've won in your Warhammer time?
It's definitely the biggest tournament I've won best overall at. You know, I've always won. I've won a bunch of best overalls at smaller GTs, but first major, yeah, this is it.
And you took Imperial Guard, I believe. So was that your how did you come up with that army? Was it just we're playing this for teams, let's bring that, or is there more?
So there's a kind of a funny story behind that. Is originally our plan, we were going down there for teams. And in previous years, they had done the AOS teams on the Thursday, Friday, and then 40K teams Saturday, Sunday. So we had this whole plan for doing AOS teams and then 40K teams. And just all of us brain farted, didn't look at the dates, found out that they had moved the AOS teams to the same day as the 40K teams. So we said, screw it, what can we do? We have two full guard armies, so and Chris brought his Chris and Jason brought their armies. So Will and I played in Adepticon's champs with the guard that we had brought for teams, and we showed up the morning of, like 8 o'clock. Said, "Can we play?" And they said, "Sure, come back at 8:30."
This is so amazing, and because Will also did pretty well. I think 3-1 and very high. He was, I believe, 3-1 and very high. So
he played. Funny thing about Will's games is he played a total for four matches, a total of I think like 3 hours of Warhammer.
Oh yes, he was always. Every time I saw Will, he was walking about, and I was like, "I'm barely done deploying here. What is going on?"
The only game he lost was to the guard mirror, and that's because the other guard player went first.
That tracks. Has that been your experience in your games? Did you feel like first turn was a big deal in every? Because you know, there it's always a point of contention with Adepticon. You know, the terrain, and then because you know Nassim's army is based on I want to exploit terrain, and I'm gonna butcher his name. I'll just say the German guy that was in the finals versus Nassim was also. We're going to exploit this terrain.
Empire, yeah, absolutely. No, that was the idea why we were taking guard for the Adepticon terrain. I went first, luckily, three of my four games. And the one game I didn't go first was against Votan, and I just kind of I backlined stuff, so he really didn't have range to shoot me.
Yeah, which is the problem for Votan. And in the top six, where did you land in the top 16 thing? Because I honestly did not really follow top 16 because I was sloshed that day. Very, very sloshed.
I don't know where I placed overall top 16. I did play Ben Sherwin the first round, and I played my last round in the champs was against his buddy Scott. Both of them running a really good list, the Black Templar Impulsor Spam.
Yes.
And Ben had talked to Scott for the night before and figured out where Scott went wrong. Scott's mistake was not going first. Ben went first and got hyper aggressive on me with Impulsors. Turn two, he was charging Kazakin with Impulsors. He was shooting stuff off. And the difference between Ben and Scott's list is Ben had a huge brick of Terminators that had all the buffs on them, and I couldn't push forward. I couldn't push out. Because they would have just picked up tanks, and they ended up picking up tanks, and I made a very key deployment mistake. We had two rocks in the middle. I should have used my sentinels to screen out the impulsors coming through those. I didn't. Ben saw it. He capitalized, and he gave me a schooling very early in the morning.
Yeah, the top 16 is where this kind of mistake gets punished heavily. Where some other random schmuck. Maybe would not see that play, but then not to stop on your rampage. You guys also went and conquered the team event with.
We did.
So was it the same four? So basically the same 4,000 points of guard, and then split into four.
Pretty much, some differences. Chris, as the captain, took the Vanquisher, which is a -5 ignore invul gun, knowing that. Only the captains would have super heavies. That helped us. Will had a unit of Kazarkin with the mechanized infantry and a Chimera. And then the only differences between Jason and my list was a couple. Like the major differences were Sentinels and what the Kazarkin's secondaries were. But pretty much, we each had one Lehman Russ commander with the battle cannon because we wanted to make that gatekeeper. We all, three of us, except for Chris, had command squads because the banner's broken.
Yes.
We all had a unit of Kazarkin. We all had two units of troops with mortars. And then we all had two plasma tanks.
Troops with mortars? Elaborate.
They're OBSEC, which is really important for Adepticon, considering so many of the missions.
Team scoring?
Yeah. So many of the teams required you to have two units from either player in there, and OBSEC helps. And the mortars, just because you want to pick up the people are going to be using small units. Like in the guard, we had two guard mirrors. We were using our mortars to pick up their infantry squads. You focus on one player, you eliminate their units in that quarter on that objective. All of a sudden, they're not scoring that primary, or they're not scoring that secondary. So the mortars, for the extra little chip shots help.
That's really, because that's something that we don't really see in the normal games, because then you have access to the heavy weapon squad with triple mortars and triple mortars three times. So I like that play. I think that's a very smart play of adjusting to a format of bringing some mortars in some sort of fashion anyway. I like it. It puzzled me because you never see that, but then you don't get access to the heavy weapon squad because... Well, you want them tanks, right?
Yeah, and I mean, they're free upgrades, so you might as well take them, right?
Oh, so it's a free mortar as well. Sweet. Okay.
The mortar's a free upgrade to the unit. Yeah. It's dumb.
And did you feel like guard... Obviously, you won, so you probably feel like guard was the best choice in terms of the... That are... Is that your feeling overall? Is guard any event, anywhere, anytime, right now, is guard your...
No.
Which one?
No.
Which one do you think?
Adepticon... The terrain heavily favors guard. They don't have whatever ruins were on the table. Some tables had weird box shaped things. Other tables had very tiny ruins, or you just had giant rocks that were like wall, right? The guard tanks, the fact that you can order them to advance and shoot, they can get angles and stuff. Our last matchup in teams, we played against World Eaters. Pajama Pants and Brad Chester's team, and we just deployed everything at 34 inches back, which meant those 8-bound weren't getting a turn one charge. and we just made the field an open.
Yeah, you place all the rocks on the side, and you just make like the longest. Yeah, there's.
They also Adepticon also had a rule where any piece of terrain, including forests, needed to be 4.5 inches from another piece. So if you got first drop, which we did, you could like put a forest on that center objective, and then they couldn't put a piece of terrain near it. And you could also shove your terrain to their side, so you could really take advantage of stuff like that.
Yeah, that was really the 4.5, because they made the 4.5 terrain rule because their terrain is so huge. So like you need to put them close together. But they also have like these huge forests, which like most of my games, that's also what I did, is place the four. As soon as I got the first like pick, I placed the biggest forest in the dead center of the board in all my championship games, just because, well, you're not getting anywhere close, and that's like a huge like circle of death. Like that's where people go to die.
Pretty much. And especially with guard tanks. And then the plasma tanks are the real. I mean, the plasma tanks are such.
Yes, such undercosted for sure. Like you're gonna say good, but the real word you're looking for is undercosted.
No, they're a problem.
Do you think that this is what's gonna change in the April balance deathslate? Because we're rumored to get one more deathslate before Thent, which I found ludicrous. But
I hope the Kazarkin lose born soldiers. Being able to use the strat to auto wound on fives with them, and then the other strat to get wounds on mortals to sixes. So even if they changed, like they did with the Votan, that the auto wounding doesn't count as a six, that's a huge change. I mean, you're still throwing out a ton of AP2 or AP3 or even AP4 with an order shots with them, but not getting those mortals and then not spreading those mortals out. Like in teams, we faced a guard mirror. And we hit two Lehman Russes that had already had wounds stripped off and killed them both with mortars.
If it was, if only it was six and six, you know, like six, mortar, six total. Yeah, mortal wounds.
Yeah, mortal wounds. It was gross. My game versus Scott, he had the Black Templar unkillable bike captain, except when you just take the order and put a banner near them, you can really kill a bike captain.
Yeah, they're
just
very mortal then.
Yeah.
I find the banner it pisses me off to no end. The finial of something, it makes me unreasonably angry.
Yeah,
it's like pick a unit not a like a bubble in a bubble army. Like who does that? Who thinks that this is a smart play? It baffles me. Like it's literally the first Ironstone for the Iron Hands. Like every tank around. It's the same thing. It's just as dumb. Every tank. Okay, let me put all my tanks there. Same thing. Everybody around ignores everything. Well, that sounds really good.
And Lord Solar, like, the fact that he can give out three orders, he can give out orders to tanks. It meant that all of our tanks were always in range of orders. It meant that one unit was always getting full rerolls from something. Like, it's just, the army has so efficient at everything it does.
I agree. I think it's what Tao wishes it would be right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I played Tao my first round in champs, and it wasn't like, I mean, he could have had a little more of an optimized Tao list. He had two broadsides, he had no riptides. And I mean, the broadsides, you know, they hurt a tank, but one broadside actually does not kill a tank. And then one tank can really go back and kill the broadside. So yeah, those tanks are super efficient.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now I have two follow-up questions. First one, and because I know a lot of like listeners would be angry if I didn't ask this. Is there like a villain origin story about the leggings? There must be I cannot. Because for those of you who don't know, Jeff always wear these god-awful / amazing Blood Angel leggings to tournaments. And it is wonderful, terrifying. I mean, lots of adjectives can be used here. But there must be a story behind. Like, did you lose a bet and then you just, like, kept on? Like, is this like
no,
a...
No. This is all me. I think we're going back to, like, 2019... I was going to the last ETC, and I've been playing a lot of Blood Angels. My first love has always been Blood Angels. So I had a bunch of, I was playing an Ultramarine spam list, but it was all painted up as Blood Angels. So I thought, and then I saw these people advertising leggings on Facebook, and I'm like, you know what? Let's see if they had it. They had them. Had to message them. The funny thing is, they only come in women's sizes. So I had to message him being like, hey, I'm a 6 foot man, you know, 170 pounds. What size of leggings would fit me? And apparently women's extra large are the size leggings I wear. And yeah, so they matched. I wore them to the ETC. They got real rank after 5 days of wearing them. But they matched the army. And since then, it's kind of been a thing. Like,
well,
if
it's your uniform. I mean,
I know if I don't wear them to the event, I get asked 17 times, hey, where's the leggings? So I kind of have to wear them now, but they are, unfortunately, they're almost coming to the end of their life. I don't know if that's a good thing for some people or a bad thing. And unfortunately, again, the company that made them went out of business a couple years ago.
Yeah,
so
I wonder why. No, but while you were explaining this, I now know how to present this to people. Jeff's leggings are like a train wreck. You cannot help but to look. You don't
That's
want
correct.
To look, but you cannot help yourself. All
right. And it's theme points, right? They go with my army.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I first of all, I love it because, you know, I'm really big into the, you know, wear whatever you want. If you got, you know, like, I make fun of like all these dorks with their team T-shirt all the time, but it's the same. It's just, like, you want to feel like you belong in a club and everything. Like, good on, like, good for you. And then if you're happy with repping your, you know, like Steve's Garage Warhammer Club, more power to you. If you want, you know, you wear a legging, you wear a legging. The guy that always shows up in a kilt, good for him. I would not, but that doesn't mean that I don't love it. But I love, like, the leggings is just like it's your Warhammer outfit, just like that club jersey or whatever, you know. So I like it, actually.
They're super comfortable. Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, they look tight, but it's like there's such a freedom of movement, and why not?
Sorry, freedom of movement put pictures in my head that at 10 a.m. I did not want to have, because I know they will follow me for the rest of the day. You touched on something really interesting. Being comfortable at tournaments, how would you rank? Because you've been to a lot of high-end events, like long rounders and everything. How much like of a, I'll say, priority do you give to, like, being comfortable and not, like, you know, not being
100%.
Miserable?
It's something that I actually, now that I'm getting older, you know, I'm over 40. It being comfortable. I got back issues, so I make sure that I'm wearing clothing that's, you know, warm if it's going to be cold, or you know, making sure I got the breathable clothing. If I'm wearing one of those polyester team shirts, I actually wear another cotton shirt underneath it so that the team shirt doesn't, because, you know, those polyesters, they just hold sweat and they get real stinky by like round three. So I find wearing a shirt underneath it, even if it's a little warm, it means I'm not smelling. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is reach your hand up to go grab a model and you catch a whiff of yourself. I make sure I have always comfortable running shoes. And the most important thing, as I tell everyone, is I sit down. I sit down a lot. My opponent's doing their movement phase, I'm sitting down. If it's an important role, I might stand up to watch it. But for the most part, I'm sitting down. I'm rolling my save sitting down. On my turn, I'll stand up. But I know guys, like, I've talked to Sam, you know, Sam, he, one thing him and I has always talked about, he, like, his back hurts after a tournament, his feet hurt. And I've been telling him, like, dude, you gotta sit, even those 5 minutes of sitting and then you're standing up for 10 and then 5 minutes of sitting again, it allows me to get through, you know, a 4-round day.
Oh, I've seen Sam play. Sam is like Batman. He just looms and broods over the table. He stands up and then he dead stares you all the time. So it's, I believe every word you said is backward. Yeah, I've never seen him like sitting down at no point in an event. Like he's yeah. all, So, but I do that all the time. As soon as I get like an important, like if I'm done with my stuff, I sit down until somebody, like until something relevant happens. For sure. But I'm glad to hear you say this, because this is something that I do this all the time. Like my Warhammer attire is like me not wanting to kill myself after round three, yeah. You know? And that's also something I've said regularly on podcasts, is I don't think I've ever lost a round four in my entire life, or almost to some like sloppy play. Cause a lot of people that they're like, they're washed after like the fourth round, like on the last day, and people just like playing poorly and everything, like, oh, I made this mistake. This, I don't get that, because I'm like kind of still in the groove, but it takes a toll. So I'm glad this is part of your like routine or your like preparation to a tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I've even started bringing a giant water bottle that I fill up, just because like one of the great things we did for this Adepticon is we got down there, we hit a Costco, and we picked up a case of vitamin water, a case of Gatorade, a case of San Pellegrino, and just a case of regular water. And almost all that stuff was gone by the weekend. Just being able to like sit there and one of us runs out to the car and you bring back like 12 drinks, just constantly keeping yourself hydrated. You don't feel like crap. If I'm not like having to go to the bathroom, like to take a whiz every hour, I'm not drinking enough. That's it. Like, cause you're going to be drinking beer. You can be eating crappy food. So I might as well make sure I'm hydrated. I'm sitting down, and that allows me to to keep that mental bandwidth, to focus on the game, not going, oh crap, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. If you have to stop and think about like what my meal is, or am I going to shit myself because I ate like 19 chicken nuggets, because that's all there is at the concession stand.
Oh, that still happens.
Of course it does.
We also, the smart thing we were for Adepticon, just because, hey, you know, like parking's a mess down there. Teams, we Ubered Eats our lunch every day. And we ordered it the night before in the morning, scheduled for delivery.
At like a fixed time. That's very smart. We did not. We went to the what's it called? Like intermittent fasting strategy, where we eat breakfast and then we don't eat the entire day, and then we eat like a large amount of animals at the end of the day. You know, we go to a farm and then they
I want that one.
That one, and that one, sir. This is for 12 people. I know what I'm about, son.
Sir, there's two of you. Yes.
Yes, might need that extra chicken. no, but yeah, that's a very smart. We did that last year, and then we realized like we were spending like so much money on food, but we were also not miserable, like because the not only is it like garbage food, but it's also like overcosted, and you have to battle the line because like all 400 or 500 people that are there are like done at the same time, the lunch breaks at the same time, so it's like triple inconvenience over inconvenience, right? So
yeah, having the drinks and those Uber Eats, that saved us those 2 days. We didn't have to worry. Like we knew our game was finishing and Chick-fil-A was coming, or we knew our game was finishing on the Sunday and our deep dish pizza was coming. Which, by the way, that was my first time with a Chicago style deep dish pizza, and that was amazing.
Oh, really? You're into Chicago deep dish?
I am now.
That is my one. I don't. I love Chicago food, but I love the sandwiches. I think they make the greatest like sandwiches of all kind. But deep dish pizza is like really not my thing. I think everybody should try one or should try it, but it is really not. I don't know, man. Like it's like a brick of cheese with like some ingredient, and then it's like floppy and wet. Ugh. Do it for me.
We each had two pieces each. There was one piece left, and I'm like, I'll take it. And that was a mistake.
Yes. Yes. And that's, you know what's cool? That this is everybody's first time eating Chicago-style pizza. They do exactly that. Everybody. Yeah, I can have one more. Yeah, I can eat a whole small pizza by myself. What am I, a child?
Oh, no, I knew I shouldn't have it, but I didn't want to let it go to waste.
I understand. I fully understand. Okay, and then remember, that was my question about leggings. And we end up talking about Chicago style pizza. But second part of this long ended question. What's next for the Jeff Brown? What event and what army are you building? Are you sticking with Guard for foreseeable future?
No, I'm moving on. I have so next event is Canhammer Team. That's this weekend in literally 2 days. So I'm leaving tomorrow to drive out there. I forget, like a 32 teams, 5-man team event. So that's the next one. I got a couple small ones, but the big one is I'm on the coaching staff for the Canadian WTC team.
Yes.
So I'll be heading over to Belgium in August, and then Warhammer Champs in November.
Yeah, and I heard that the WTC was kind of a big deal, so I'm you know, glad to see you take this seriously, because I heard it was a really a challenging event. So coaching, do you want to talk about a little bit of the coaching staff? I think that's a very fun and interesting topic. So your role is I'm guessing assistant coach among assistant coaches, because yeah, I know Jeremy's
head coach, and there are three other coaches that we're bringing along, myself included. How we've basically and the idea is it's just you're there to assist the players, and because I mean the Aussies did it last year and they won.
Yes,
they had four coaches. Jeremy realized, and all our coaches in previous years have realized, what a chore it is trying to coach eight people. And you're doing stuff like, so if there's a rules dispute, it goes to the players first, then it goes to the coaches or captains. So you're there trying to work out a rules dispute before you bring it to the judges. You're there to keep the players informed of how the rest of the round's going. If they need to push for points, if they need to pull back because we're doing well, not take a risk, that's your job. And by having four coaches, that means we have one coach for every two tables. So I can keep a good understanding of the two tables that I'm working on. I can keep a good understanding of what's going on with them. We can be running information back and forth between the other coaches. We can figure out which tables need to push. So instead of having, you know, the one coach and, you know, the 5 minutes at the table trying to get a lay of the land and figure out what's going on, you can watch two tables simultaneously. You'll be better informed of the status of each game so that we can make those calls of, hey, you need to push for those extra 3 points, or no, someone else is going to push. I want you to pull back and just you know, score your 11.
Now's not the time for a Hail Mary. Because then you get the full information on, it's better to try it on this side rather than on this side because of like, but whereas you know, yeah, Jeremy running across like eight tables worth of and trying to make sense of all of this, it's not possible. It's not, you know, it's not on him to not be able to do that. It's like nobody can do that. Like, not even like a big brain Liam Hackett can probably do that. Like,
it's a lot. So yeah, splitting the load between four people allows us. We're also able to kind of pick a few codexes with 10th around the, you know, horizon. It's going to be a whole new game. So we've kind of divided the existing codexes between all of the coaches, and our job is to know those like four codexes in and out. What tricks do they have? You know, what should our players be watching out for? So when we have a player matched up against one of those codexes, we already know the strats. We already know the tricks. We already know those little hidden tech secrets. So that when the player gets the matchup, they can come to us as well as one of the faction experts on the team and go, how do I play this? What do I need to watch out for? How am I going to match up to this? So by dividing that knowledge load between four players, I think we're trying to set ourselves up for success.
I really love this strategy because this allows you a much more in-depth knowledge of these, because everybody at WTC knows roughly what everything does, but getting that real, like, this is the one combo and this is how it works and this is how you kind of dodge it, that's not something you kind of pick up on when you read the book first. Like, I said that all the time. Like, I have a vague understanding of everything in the game.
Yep.
But I know exactly how nothing in the game works. But I just know roughly, oh yeah, this, but now if I, like, you know, coach Jeff Brown next to me and go, yeah, and then he pulls it off by doing this, this, and that. So if you avoid that situation, you're good. This is so – I think it's so smart if you do this. This is something Chris Ains told me about, like, I think the week after he came back last year. It was like, next year we're bringing 4 or 5 coaches. He said this the real game changer is, like, the number of coaches. And I don't want to put, like, shade to the coaches in the past, but I think that's one thing that Jeremy kind of brought. It's like Jeremy was so skilled at what he did, and he couldn't even, like, kind of keep up. Like, he realized, okay, it's not on the – like, it's not because we had, like, shitty coaching staff before. It's just what we're trying to achieve with one coach is, like, impossible.
Yeah, I mean, look at football. You have your head coach. You have your offensive line coach. You have your defensive line coach, right? They're all – the head coach is required for everything, but you're going to rely on that coaching team to improve those little small bits.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Also, I noticed you did not talk about the get back coach, which is the most important coach in football. Very sad. Do you know what the get back coach is?
No.
It's the one coach that pulls people out of the play. Usually they pull another coach out of the field. Is called a get back coach. The NFL did, like, I think, an April Fool's video out of this. It's my favorite video of all time. Every team has one now, and just make sure nobody's standing, like, where they shouldn't
right.
be standing.
Hold on.
I feel like I would need that in Warhammer. I would need, like, somebody to go, Max, now's the moment to sit down, stop yelling, sit down, and just, you know, take a chill pill, because I would use that. I think that would be great for my Warhammer playing style, having my own little personal, like, get back coach of, like,
honestly,
hey, buddy, you did a good job. Now's the time to sit down.
Yeah, that's another one of the things is, like, if you see one of your players getting on tilt, you can walk over and just be like, hey, you're getting on tilt. Take a breath. Here's a water. Put the timer on you. Walk away for 2 minutes.
That's a very, like, with chess clocks, that's a very valid strategy of, like, I did that one game, and my opponent was, like, really baffled of, like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is my time, and I'll do whatever. And right now, what I want to do is think about, like, I'm going to move my 12 little toy soldiers. That's such a good, like, strategy, and something you also don't really – because, like, when you're on tilt, it doesn't make sense, right? Like, to do that, like, to stop yourself. Like, I want to – it's go time. I want to go, man. So yep. I think it's a great addition. And then – Which armies are the Jeff Brown armies for coaches? Is that too? Do you not want to go there? Or
no? What army is what I'm working on? Yeah. I've moved to a. I'm working on a Votan army right now. But it's like this is a passion project. So it's a full Votan army, all converted from Caradhran Overlord models. So my land forts are going to be the big ships. I can show you around.
Sneak peek.
I don't know if it's a show. Yeah, my berserks are.
You'll send me a picture, and I'll put it in the episode description somewhere in the post.
My berserks are the berserkers from AOS,
which are much better. Can we also?
But the legs are cut off, and they're actually on Votan legs. My bikes, my pioneers are mix of gyrocopters and the little small boats. From the Caradhran Overlords, so yeah, that's the
passion project. This is like a triple the cost for that's how you know it's a real passion project. It's
so it'll probably be sometimes, you know, around May maybe.
But Votan is such a good army to do that because it's such a small book right now that it's kind of easy to do the whole, like, you can do the whole army with this. Conversion thing, yep. And then you'll still have the old, like, collection. Whereas something like large, like Space Marine, if you start doing that, man, there's like a lot of unit to, like, convert in, like, triplicate almost. Because
I've learned that I've had my fully converted Space Marine army, and then just it's now completely obsolete because just keeping up with the special shoulder pads and the special heads, it's just I don't have enough for all the new units coming out.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. Just the time to convert everything, and no, there's just too much. So I think it's a smart play to do that with Votan. It's like I talked with TJ a couple weeks back, and he's doing that with Genestr Cult. And I was like, you know, TJ, I love you. You're crazy because Genestr Cult is, like, such a large army. He's like, well, you know, I'm building the whole collection, so I don't care about, you know, how large it is because we're gonna get all of it in due time. But Volta and World Eater. Like, World Eaters is the one I was, like, most tempted on doing that, because getting the full World Eater, like, faction is somewhat easy. It's such a small book, right? So, and do you think that's the direction that they're going to go moving forward, like, smaller faction, or do you think as soon as they can, they will expand on Votan and, like, World Eaters?
I think, you know, we're already seeing with the Kill Team that came out, they announced at Adepticon that there is a Jump Pack Votan model. So it's classic GW. Why wouldn't they expand World Eaters and Votan? World Eaters is a little harder because you have the whole CSM range behind them. And if you compare them to Thousand Suns got what? Zangors, Scarabs, and Rubrics. And World Eaters already have Jackals, Berserkers, and Eightbound. So I don't know what else. I mean, I hope they could add stuff. I would love to see Marines on Juggernauts.
Yes. I think that's the God given, like, the one that's like, why would you just put one character?
Yeah, exactly.
That was the one that shocked people for sure.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of, I'm looking over at the collection over there. I think there's a lot of space to go with Votan. You could do a lot of stuff. I do hope though, especially for Marines, that they bring the range in somewhat. I think the division between Primaris and Firstborn is dumb. I really hope in 10th they just go to, this is a Marine. Here is your tactical squad, whether it's Primaris or Firstborn, doesn't matter. You can mix and match. Because really the stats are about the same, right? The only thing different right now between them is keywords. They have the same amount of
attacks and weaponry, right? Like there's
weaponry, yeah, but like that's what I'm saying. Like there's no reason why a Primaris Marine can't hold a missile launcher. There's no reason why a Firstborn can't have a bolt rifle. Right, like there's literally no reason why they couldn't just pick this weapon up, other than the fact that this is the way the models are modeled. Marines don't need 84 data sheets. I like what they did with World Eaters, where it's like 9 stratagems for either you have 9 in one way or 9 the other way. Then they've kind of alluded to that's the way it's going, that you pick a certain...
I love that. That's my favorite part of, like, what they're heading into with 10th edition is, like, the one, like, literally one page of rules for your entire army. I love that. I love that. But I think when the index shows up, and that's my 10th, I've been saying that for years, I think we'll have Codex Primaris and Codex Firstborn or something like that. Like, I think they will be completely divided, not united at all.
Probably not, especially if the way they were talking, you know, they were mentioning you could take a specific force, like you could take a Terminator force or a First Company force, and you would get access to certain stratagems and certain rules, or you could take a Vanguard force and you would get access to certain stratagems, certain rules. Maybe they do that. Maybe they do. Here's your Firstborn company. Here's your Primaris company. They don't need so many.
But I still think that, like, not replacing the entire Marine range was a mistake. Like, adding the Primaris, I don't like that. I would just have, like, axed them at, like, straight, like...
You could have just called them True Scale Marines and been away with it.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but they're kind of the Stormcast have the same kind of problem where they added units and now they're all sort of the same, but sort, like, there's three troops that are exactly the same, but some have robes and some don't. Like, why would you do that? Just, like, call them liberators but give them maces instead of axes or whatever. Like, they did not need to go this hard into, like, making the, like, this in Age of Sigmar is that, like, Stormcast Codex every other codex, like,
right?
Why? So I get that they're the flagship army, but
it's too many.
And that's kind of the Age of the Warhammer Fantasy problem of, like, they don't want to axe the Firstborn because, well, people have them and we don't want to invalidate their collection. But the people that have the Firstborn and are, like, really stuck in their way, they're not going to buy anything new because, you know, they're not really your customers anymore because you're enabling them to stay in the game. And, like, as much as I don't want to see my modeling effort turn to dust, like, you've had a couple of years, you know? Like, you've had the time. Would you feel, like, completely emasculated if they said, you know, hey, your firstborn, no bueno anymore. Would that, like, because like, you have a significant Marine army, would that put you like, well, I'm done with this, James?
I have 16,000 points of painted Blood Angels. And I'd say probably almost 10,000 of that is firstborn or firstborn units. Rhinos, Tactical Marines, Assault Marines, Death Company, even Sanguinary Guard. They're all firstborn units, right? So would I be upset? No. Because guess what? Those models still are there. I'm sure I could go to any TO and say, I'm going to use this as a Primaris Marine. Look, I've added cork to the base to bump it up a bit, right? Like, it's still a painted model, and at the end of the day, it represents a set of rules on a tabletop. So I'd rather take simplicity in rules over too much complexity. Or like, why do you need Reavers? Are a great looking model, garbage unit, just because there are other units that do it better. You have two different versions or three different versions of intercessors with different guns. You have assault intercessors. You have incept or whatever they are, infiltrators. You have the guys with the paired combat blades, and they're all the same. They're all the same stat line. It's just what weapons they come with. Like, what you don't need 7 data sheets for something that is literally almost the same, just with a different weapon.
I agree. I think you nailed on the bed on the head. Sorry, with I will take simplicity over a wide variety of models. I think that's the best. I think that's the best way to put it. I also land on that boat like very much of like, give me something that's very straightforward and I'm happy, even if it's, you know. Even if I have to make up like the fluff or the lore kind of in my mind or force it, you know, I want to build this thematic thing. It doesn't need to be involved in the tournament scene that much. Like, these are two different things of like, if I want to build something to compete, it's probably not going to be lore accurate or whatever.
Exactly.
That's not, but if I want to build an all Reaver army or whatever, I'll just do it. I don't need rules. I don't need it to be good. You know, there's trying to please everybody is always a big mistake. I think that GW is kind of slowly moving away from of like making everybody needs to enjoy this thing. No, we don't. Crusade people things and match play people like match play things. They don't all need to be in the same.
And even then, and even competitive wise, there is complexity in simplicity. Yes. You can find those small little interactions with simple rules that allow you these complex plays. When you get too complex, one of two things happens. Either you move away from the very complex thing, because you have too many similar rules, obviously one choice will be the best and the other 7 will never be used. Or nothing is good because everything is trying to do everything and it's just a generic mishmash of whatever.
I think this is the perfect way to close this thing. I mean, you nailed it on the head. I am super stoked that I got to talk to you. I am super stoked that you are wearing the golden top hat and that you have won a ticket. Because you really deserve it. You've been in there a long time, and it was truly a testament of winning best overall, which is what the Smash Play is all about. You know, having fun, playing nice models, and you being somewhat of a decent player. I won't go too far there. That's right, Jeff Brown. That's right. You get one insult per show, and I kept it for last. Any closing statements here before I let you go?
No, man. Just I appreciate the opportunity. You and I have known each other for a real long time now. So anytime I get to see you, I'm always excited to see you at a tournament, and getting to see you and talk to you today was great. Thank you for the kind words. I do appreciate it. Even the insult. I love it.
If you keep winning, I'll keep talking to you. This is how I roll. All right, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And then I'll put pictures of vote, Jeff's vote and converted vote in somewhere in that post. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you.